I think you absolutely must be learning how to use AI right now. If you don't want to use it on specific client matters, that's okay. It's okay to be cautious here, but you must be learning how to use it and how to incorporate it into your practice, because if you don't, then you will not be a practicing attorney for very long. You can't continue to build time and make money that way when other lawyers will be adapting generative AI, which makes them much more efficient and effective in how they're able to deliver legal services. They will stop billing by the hour.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Answering Legal's Everything Except the Law podcast. I am your host, Nick Werker. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the podcast where we share expert advice on all the parts of running a law firm that attorneys weren't exactly trained for back in law school. Now, my guest today is a lawyer offering a rather unique alternative to the traditional hourly business billing model. He's known as the subscription attorney, and his firm offers legal advice starting at $19.99 a month. So in this episode, we're going to be learning all about his practice and also discuss some of the challenges lawyers face during the early days of trying to establish their firms. Attorney Matthew Kerbis joins me now. Thank you so much for being here, Matthew.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And I especially love the name of the podcast because so much about what I do is like not related to the actual law part. So I feel like I have a lot I could contribute for your listeners.
You know, it's so funny that we're like, well, we want to make a podcast, but we don't have any legal ease, any like legal advice to be giving anybody. What can we talk about? Everything except the law. So it's also funny coming from you, who's someone who's actively practicing law and running their own law firm, that a lot of what you do doesn't actually talk about the law. So can you tell us a little bit about your legal background and how your career has sort of evolved over the years?
Yeah. So I'm coming up next year will be my 10th year post law school. So yes, I'm about to exit the American Bar Association defined young lawyer status very soon. For those of you watching on video, I'm starting to get a little bit of gray in my hair, what little of it I do have left. So starting to get there. And I got started in foreclosure defense, and I don't think anyone goes to law school saying, you know what I want to do? I want to fight the big banks and keep a roof over people's heads, which is what I did, which is actually like was not such a bad thing. But nobody says like I want to go do foreclosure defense, and that became doing more just real estate practice in general with real estate transactions and closings, mostly residential. But then it also started to go into more just other litigation type work. I ended up at an insurance defense firm. Also, another thing, I don't think anyone goes to law school and says, I want to defend big insurance companies from being sued or protecting their insureds. So what I used to tell people I do is a lot of what I did, more than 50% of what I did, was you get in a car accident, you let your insurance company know that somebody's suing you and they might hire me to defend you. So I also still represented people. That was most of what I did there. But I was billing hours, and that just was not fun. Even the insurance companies don't like it, let alone everyday people. They insurance companies have whole departments dedicated to just like analyzing the bills and knocking them down. And they can negotiate for themselves, where a lot of people can't with lawyers, or they don't feel comfortable doing it. And my work in the ABA sort of led me to think that there has to be a better way to do this. There's a massive access to justice problem. I've always been entrepreneurial. I pay attention to everything going on in the tech space and the startup space. And I decided I had to apply the subscription model to legal services. And at least that's the shortest way I could get from there to now.
Yeah, I am. I'm a little ashamed of how much gray comes out of my hair and my facial hair when I shave these days. It's getting a little scary. So I definitely identify with you there. I don't even want to talk about it. I wanted to talk to you on the show today because of your practice specifically. I know that you sort of talked about, you know, how you came from the billable hour and you wanted to try something new, but what inspired you to adopt like a subscription-based model instead of like a flat fee, let's say?
I wish I could like remember the aha moment specifically, but part of it was what was common for a lot of lawyers who end up using the subscription model, of which there are not a lot of, but of those who use the subscription model, a lot of them had a similar revelation, which was, my clients aren't calling me because they're afraid that the clock is going to start ticking. And also, I feel bad if they do call and they have a quick legal question that I answer in a minute or two, and I don't want to bill them a full point one, which is for 6 minutes. And so, like, I'm not capturing that time for these clients. And so I should also say that even though I was working for other law firms over the almost eight years that I was working at other firms before starting my own practice, because now I've been doing this for about 14 months for my own thing, I was always building a book of business. And so these were not for the insurance clients when I was with the insurance firm. These were for my own personal clients that I had brought into the firm. So I was just trying to think of a way that I can capture that without them being afraid to call me, and aligning the incentives. And the subscription model really lent itself to that. So I did what any person does nowadays. This was before, depending on when you're listening to this, this was before ChatGPT and generative AI. Had that existed at the time, I might have gone to that and been like, describe all the different models that you could use to bill clients that's not the billable hour, and prompt it for that and see what it said. But at the time, I Googled it. Google, depending on what year you're listening to this to, Google used to be a company that we would go to find answers that other people had on the internet. So I Googled it, and I saw that there were some lawyers using it. And so I looked at their websites. Some of them had prices, some of them didn't. There were maybe only like three or four that I could actually find their websites, and the ABA wrote an article about it, but just one article. This was like 2017 or 2018. I think it was 2018. And then I just started to look at the subscription model and learn everything I could about it, and just adapted it in my very own way. And as I was talking to those people, because I did reach out to some of them since I found their websites, and one of them did speak to me, Kim Bennett, and she ended up being the first guest on my podcast, Law Subscribed, which is all about subscription legal services and other lawyers using it or technologists building for it. And so I figured, well, I'm already talking to these people and doing this research, I might as well make a podcast about it. And the podcast actually came before the law firm, because I was originally going to launch the subscription model at the law firm, but it's hard to build a practice within a practice. And so I ultimately decided to go off on my own.
By the way, what an incredible name for your podcast, Law Subscribed. Love that. So clever.
Thank you.
I just love it. I like creative, but like, what do you call it? Succinct titles for things. It's a weird guilty pleasure of mine, I guess you could call it.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm with you.
I want to ask what your opinion is on, do you think more law firms should be looking to move away from hourly billing and exploring alternative pricing models? And what do you think are both the best benefits for you and for your clients at the same time when they use something like your model, the subscription model? Mm-hmm.
Excellent questions. And questions I've been answering since I started talking about it in 2020 publicly. And it's changed a lot. Like, even just within these last few months with generative AI, which of course I was cheekily referencing before, but now especially, like, the way that I see that going, that other innovators in the space see that going with legal services, what a lawyer looks like is going to be very different in the near future. Like, I don't, and near future could be like 5 years from now. It could be 1 year from now or 2 years from now. I mean, it's hard to predict exactly, but when you're able to use generative AI and tasks that used to take 10 hours now take 10 minutes, billing by the hour just doesn't make any sense anymore. It's not the most profitable way that you can make money moving forward. The only way to do it is to 10x your billable hour rate, which clients are not going to like to see, even if they get the same result. Mm-hmm. So you got to think about, what's another way that I could charge my clients so that they'll still be happy to hire me to get them to the result? But it's not billing time, because it simply doesn't make sense anymore, because it doesn't take long to do things anymore. So that is where value-based billing comes in, which also came up in my research. So the subscription model is not necessarily the same thing as value-based billing, but it's mm-hmm. very much related. Value-based billing is more about results, outcome oriented, and what that is worth, and then charging a flat fee or a project-based fee accordingly. What the subscription model does is it makes up for the difference in underscoping or overscoping that value, because you still don't know how long it's going to take, and you don't know how much time you're going to have to put in. And while you're not billing your time, since it's hard to predict some things like that, especially with litigation, what the subscription model does is it allows for you to continuously make income from your client, even if it's gone way outside the scope of what was initially anticipated as part of that engagement. So like that, the subscription plus flat fee model is what works really well, is what can work really well for litigation based practices where you're now abandoning the billable hour. So I think that that's just like a practical standpoint, right? Practically. There are pure subscription plays. Like, for example, it started in the trademark space where you pay an attorney $1,000 a month or more. And as a result of that, you get so many trademark searches, trademark registrations, and unlimited cease and desist letters, those types of things per month. Now, that only makes sense for certain sized businesses, right, to actually be clients for that. But those certain sized businesses would much rather pay $1,000 a month than an unknown amount for hiring a lawyer to do stuff. So that's a pure subscription play. Those are definitely doable as well, more in the transactional space than in the litigation space. Though I'm open-minded. I'm just one guy. This is why I have the podcast. I have ideas, but I love to bring in other people to have those conversations about it. I designed my practice specifically to serve the latent legal market and also to comply with legal ethics. Like, a lot of it is like, what is reasonable? Like, is the fee reasonable is what it really comes down to. So I get asked a lot, what do you get for $20 a month? Which, of course, I advertise as $19.99 a month. You know, but it's easier to just say $20 a month. Is you get access to me, essentially unlimited access in scheduled 15-minute calls that you get access to at that level. You get access to more of my calendar at higher subscription levels. But I carve out 2 to 3 hours a day during the workday for that level to exclusively schedule time with me. They get access to below market flat fee rates, and they get access to a growing knowledge base of just other legal advice I've given clients with personal identifying information removed. So each one of those things individually is probably worth $20 a month. Even just getting access to below market flat fee rates is probably worth $20 a month. So like, you're not getting legal services for $20 a month. You're kind of, because if you have a legal question that you need legal advice for that I could answer in a 15-minute phone call or Zoom meeting, then yeah, you are getting legal services in a way, just not what we traditionally think of as legal services. So then all my other pricing around that I think is reasonable and accessible for the latent legal market, which is legal people who can't afford traditionally priced legal services, but also don't qualify for legal aid. But I'm only doing that transactional, not doing it litigation. There's a lot of space for people to do it litigation. I'm only one solo attorney. So that's how I've decided to do it, to comply with legal ethics. And what has that allowed me to do to continue to actually answer your question? That's just context to answer your question, which is, it gives me peace of mind that I have recurring revenue, monthly recurring and annual recurring revenue, without having to be concerned about invoicing my clients. I have no receivables that are unpaid because people pay me in advance, or they pay me at the moment of delivery because I use a client portal. So when I draft a contract or analyze a contract for somebody, I put it for review in the client portal. And when they sign in to look at it, they are prompted to pay that $50 per page that ended up being. So they pay for it and boom, they get access. So I'm not taking fees in advance, although I do have an IOLTA account just in case. And so that gives me peace of mind for that and not having to collect and chase after receivables and all that. It also means that I could sleep 8 hours a night, which is not always, you know, going to happen as a parent of a young child, but at least I can, you know, like get a full night's sleep and not be stressed about billing my time. And I think that leads to improved mental health for me and other attorneys who are doing it. And that's just on the lawyer's benefit. There's a lot of benefits for the clients as well.
I'm going to tell you why I selfishly love what you're doing. So I've been at this company, Answering Legal, for, I want to say it's almost 9 years now. The company's in existence for about 10. With a name like Answering Legal, a lot of what Google will spit out, or what Google used to spit out, now it's ChatGPT, was if somebody was looking for legal advice, they would send them to my site, Answering Legal, like as if I'm going to answer legal questions.
Right.
So I used to get inundated with, you know, I was pulled over, I had a gun in my glove box, what do I do? And I'm like, whoa, I'm a call center for attorneys. I do legal intakes for lawyers. You have to contact your local bar. I can't give you a referral. I can't touch this in like a nice way, right? Mm-hmm. And it's taken, I don't know, all of my 8 years here to slowly drive our messaging to the point where, you know, Google doesn't spit that out and people know not to contact me for that sort of thing anymore, right? But, and I'm not saying that people who are planning on committing crimes should subscribe to a lawyer because of the nature of their, income or whatever. But it seems logical to me that the next evolution of hiring a lawyer is a subscription-based model. And sometimes it drives me crazy because I'm like, oh, I got all these bills coming out and everything is, I got too much stuff I'm paying for. But I'll give you an example of, I don't smoke a lot of cigars, but I do. I used to smoke more, but I love cigars. There's a local cigar shop. The guy bought it, he renovated it, and he does monthly subscriptions, but it's way better than what it used to be because I used to not want to do it or pay all the money. I haven't been to this cigar place in like 6 months, but just the fact that I know that on a whim, if I want to, I can bring two guests for what I pay for. There's a beautiful lounge. It's private. I can, if it's raining outside, I can smoke a cigar inside. Just the fact that I know that that's available makes me happy. I'm happy to pay it every month. So for me, if I'm a business owner who needs a lot of business advice, cease and desist, hiring and firing, employment, all of these things, it makes perfect sense to me. Why would I not want to? And it's the next evolution of pay, you paid a retainer in the past, you know, why would you not want a subscription model so that when you need it, it's available to you? I just twofold love that I don't have to answer people's questions anymore, that I am legally not allowed and not capable of answering. And I just think it's cool to see that the legal profession is evolving in this way. So I commend you, but I just love it.
Yeah. And three points to your commentary. And the first is like for criminal law, the subscription in the way I'm doing it probably doesn't make sense for the reason that you said and that everyone thinks. Well, you can't do it for criminal law. You don't want to encourage people like commit crimes and you're their attorney to get them off. But what you can do, and a lot of lawyers, a lot of criminal defense lawyers are already charging a flat fee to do the defense of these cases. Yep. So why not make it a subscription at flat fee for the pendency of that defense, right? And a lot of what I've talked about with other people about how to do that is like there's like a starting fee that's a flat fee, then there's like a monthly fee during the pendency of the litigation, whatever it is, if it's criminal defense, then there's a like a success fee at the end or a settlement fee if it settles, and there's like three different types of like, you know, it settles. And then I guess for criminal law, that's like the equivalent of like, so either like they get you off is a one flat fee. There's like a plea bargain is another fee, or you go to trial is like a fee per day kind of a thing. So then I think that could work in that space, but also then let's say they get you off and you're on probation, then you could do a course, like a subscription course of how to comply with probation. And this is one of those things where like, as a lawyer, you have a lot of important legal information. It's not even necessarily legal advice, but it's productizing your legal information to be like, here's how you comply with probation. You record that program once, they get access to it, you know, for the price of the subscription, or like you build out the course and some of these other traditional, you know, online course ways, and you only have to update your course as the law changes and updates, right? So now you can like monetize that even more, and your client hopefully is happy because now they've complied with their probation, which puts them on the right track. So it's good for society. So I think there are ways to do that. For like the cigar example that you gave, I have an HVAC company that I pay $9 a month to, only $9 a month, right? And what does it get me? It gets me so many benefits as a member that, you know what, probably non-members aren't even using, but like a free full house plumbing inspection annually, that's worth $9 a month, probably. I get like discounts on all the other, I get a 10% discount on any other services that I use with them. And I get some other special pricing, like depending on the season. Like members get special pricing on their, you know, air conditioning repair or servicing, you know, before the summer type thing. Now I'm sure that, you know, there's not a lot of people that are paying the full price, or they see that price difference in their advertising, like, well, I'll pay $9 a month. But it's becoming a thing everywhere. So I completely agree with you that eventually all lawyers will come around to see that too.
I do also like the idea. It's, you don't have to incentivize people, but I could see like maybe a trucking company being a subscription member of a traffic ticket firm. You know, it's like, oh, my truckers are gonna get pulled over. They're gonna go. They're gonna speed. They're gonna run a red light. They're gonna get. Why not have somebody who's just guaranteed to handle that, so I don't have to do it one off and one off and one off and one off.
That is a great idea. I haven't heard that yet, Nick. And, you know, I talk about this a lot. The closest thing I could think of that's the service that I offer that I don't advertise on my website because I usually only explain it to small businesses who might be interested in it is I offer an employee legal services plan. So it's like instead of the employees individually coming to me and paying me $20 a month, the employer does. And now all of their employees have access to legal advice and all my flat fee services. Not all of them, because some of them don't make sense for like if an employer is giving it to an employee, like I'm not going to help that employee set up a business, you know, because then they'd leave that business that they're working for. But I have like a package where that's what I do. Where like I let the employers pay for that as a benefit to their employees. So it's not exactly the same thing, because what you said, I think is actually a really cool idea for a niche practice to do that, to like look at those markets and like where could they offer subscriptions. But it is in a way like an employee benefit almost, it sounds like.
Yeah, if I'm a trucker and I'm getting tickets, I wouldn't want to pay them. And so if my company paid them for me, I also have friends who are truckers and they tell me all this stuff. So I guess that's why it's top of mind for me.
And these days, truckers are making a decent living too. So they could afford $20 a month. Yeah. Though I'm only licensed in Illinois. And I also don't do traffic tickets.
My friend owns a moving company. And so he's constantly, I could go on forever about crazy ideas with you. We will be right back after this short ad.
How our business works is that we get phone calls all during the day, after 5 o'clock, during the night, weekends, all the time. It's hard to have somebody on staff to answer calls 24 hours, 7 days a week. My name is Neil Gainsburg. I'm the owner and principal of Gainsburg Law here in Chicago, Illinois. We're there to protect individual rights and collect compensation for individuals that have been injured or harmed in some way. We've been a customer of Answering Legal since approximately 2015. When we're not there, after hours, evenings, nights, weekends, they'll answer the call like somebody at Gainsburg Law is ready and willing to answer the phone call. They'll be our virtual receptionist. We can then concentrate on other legal needs if we have a big trial coming up, if we have depositions we have to take. And most importantly, they're able to patch potential new business, new clients to us. And these new clients get that personal touch of speaking to somebody when they call in. We look forward to helping the greater Chicagoland community and the state of Illinois in the many years to come.
So, because I know that you recently spoke at this event called What Law School Doesn't Teach You. Mm-hmm. And since that topic is obviously very near and dear to both of our hearts, I wanted to ask you about it today. What are some of the biggest lessons that you wish law school had taught you about managing your own law practice?
Everything, because they taught me absolutely nothing, like zero. And here's why. And I was actually, for years, I was the young lawyer liaison to the section of legal education, which is the accrediting body of law schools. And now not all states require that you go to an ABA accredited law school to sit for the bar, California being perhaps the most famous one. But most of them do. And it's a really important position that I had. It was non-voting, but I still had to be vetted by the Department of Education, because the U.S. Department of Education delegates its accreditation authority to this body. And so I was very steeped in everything legal education, and frankly, what's wrong with it and how can we improve? And to the council's credit, they've done and they're continuing to do a lot in order to improve the state of like legal education, right? And accrediting the first ever all online JD is a big step, although it was at an in-person institution. I look forward to seeing institutions that don't have a brick and mortar presence, because then they could really reduce the cost of getting accredited. But it does come down a little bit to like law schools and like the rankings. And that's being all thrown into disarray now with U.S. News, with like a bunch of schools dropping out of U.S. News. But the schools want to place lawyers in jobs because it helps their rankings and it helps them with their marketing material. Like, look how many of our what percentage of our students pass the bar and are gainfully employed. They're not incentivized to teach lawyers how to go out and start their own law firms, even though most lawyers in the U.S. are solo or small firm practitioners and eventually become like a partner at that firm, right? And become a firm owner. So even though the majority of the profession end up being law firm owners, be that solo or a partner at a firm, we simply do not teach it in law school. I mean, it's kind of like what's wrong with, like, you know, just education in general. Like, we don't teach people how to go get a job and, like, work. We just teach you how to learn, which is great in, like, a utopian society, which we just don't live in. So you got to learn this stuff on your own. I had just interviewed Carolyn Elephant for a LinkedIn Live that I did.
I love her.
Yeah, she's great. And, like, and I said to her how, like, when I Googled how to start a law firm, like, her stuff came up. Not the ABA, not any law school. Like, it was her blog and some other blogs, like, and some other, like, resources out there and some other solo practitioners or founders of law firms who are talking about it. So, you know, like, that's what you have to do. Like, everything, soup to nuts. Like, when I speak to high school students, which I do multiple times a year, or even college students, which I do sometimes, although less frequently, who are thinking about law school, I tell them, take a business class. Like, take an accounting class, take an entrepreneurship class, take a business class, take a sales class if they have them, you know, because you got to learn these things. If you're going to want to, if even if you want to go the traditional route, partner at a big law firm and become partner at a big law firm, these skills will still help you even there. But the statistics are such that you're probably going to end up a solo or small firm practitioner and you're going to want to have these skills. But you just have to, like, for someone like me, I went on YouTube. I mean, I read a lot of articles. I read things from the Secretary of State and from the U.S. From the Supreme Court of Illinois, you know, that has a bunch of materials on how to start your own law firm through the state Supreme Court. Because there are certain compliance things you have to do. So, like, and that was what I did. And there is no course that's like, here's how to start a law firm. Except Carolyn Elephant has, like, this accelerator now that, like, is about how would you use AI to help you start your law firm. And there are, I should say, there are incubators, like the Chicago's Justice Entrepreneurs Project. Though they do have an access to justice focus, they do teach you how to start a law firm. I did not know those existed at the time that I was thinking about starting a law firm. And because of the nature of, like, leaving a firm to start a practice and wanting to be able to hit the ground running, it's not like I could go and do that incubator while I'm still working for another law firm. So even if I did know about it, I don't think the timing would have worked out. But basically everything from starting it, incorporating it, operating agreements. I mean, these are things business lawyers do kind of know. But for a law firm specifically, like, there are some specifics that apply to a law firm that they don't teach you in your business law class in law school. Getting clients is, like, I mean, everything's important. But if you can't get clients, you can know everything else and not succeed as a business. So I feel like getting clients is slightly more important than everything else. So you got to be able to get clients. So, like, marketing, networking, business development, advertising, all that stuff. Like, I don't do SEO because I'm a true solo and I can't compete. I'm never going to be able to compete with the resources of larger firms. So my niche is I'm the subscription attorney, and that's always going to come up as me. Or Legal Shield does come up too, but, like, that's like a bait and switch subscription and billable hour model, which is still better because it's like a reduced billable hour model. So they're still helping with accessibility. I don't want to totally rag on Legal Shield, but, like, that's what comes up. So, like, that's how I am, like, positioning myself is, like, I have a unique business model for my law practice, and that's my niche.
I didn't even know Legal Shield was still around. I met a bunch of them at a trade show like 6 years ago, and I remember thinking, this is a great idea and nobody's going to do it yet. So I forgot about them. I'm kind of surprised they're still around, but good for them. Mm-hmm. So you were at the ABA Tech Show recently. Can you tell us about your experience there and what did you take away from the event?
Yeah. So I've been going to ABA Tech Show for 13 years. And that's because I went to law school at DePaul in Chicago, which is in the Loop, which is where the tech show is always held. And so I've been able to go, even when it was virtual, I attended virtually. So this year was the first year that I was able to speak. I spoke on two panels, one panel and one I was the only speaker. One was on law in the metaverse, and one was on, unsurprisingly, the subscription model. And so I'd say my biggest takeaway for me was that lawyers who are at least tech forward are very interested in the subscription model and law in the metaverse because our rooms were packed. So it is definitely something lawyers are interested in. Taking that leap is another thing. While I am, like, mostly a practicing attorney, my biggest takeaway from tech show this year was that I need to actually, more than just the podcast, I need to teach lawyers how to do it, more than just them listening in and trying to figure it out on their own. So I have a wait list that you could sign up for right now if you're a lawyer. That's at subscriptionseminar.com, which was amazingly a URL that was available. So subscriptionseminar.com, and it's just a wait list. But the goal is that I'll have a 5-week like rushed course, like quick course, if you really want to get it going right away, a 5-month course and a 10-month course. And it's all going to be the same materials. It's just how condensed do you want it to actually help lawyers that want to do it, launch it. I'm going to cap it because I still have clients and like I'm servicing clients. So I can't, my goal is not to become a full-time law firm consultant. I'd rather not. But if somebody's genuinely interested and is like willing to spend the capital to do it and to straight up abandon the billable hour, then I'll take them on and I'll help coach them through how to actually do it. So like that was my biggest takeaway, is that there is interest. Actual, when I went to Tech Show, I said in the presentation, I'm not here to sell you anything, but all these lawyers came up to me afterwards and reached out to me afterwards. They were like, I want to do this. Like, can you actually teach me? Like, I will pay you to teach me. So I'm building out that right now. So that was like my biggest takeaway, is the interest in that, but also everything all like outside of like my own personal experience, I think everything was slapping generative AI onto their products now. That was like the biggest takeaway. It was like unlike the metaverse, unlike Web3, everyone, very clearly sees how generative AI can be applied either to the legal tech that they're offering to lawyers or for lawyers to use it in their practice some way or another. Like the use cases are plentiful. Granted, you have to be careful because like it's not there yet for like legal stuff. And because of hallucinations, like you can't trust it for facts. It's really better right now for like marketing and copy and like things like that than it is for like legal services. But it will get there. And I think it will help with like drafting documents and stuff. And then the lawyers just have to make sure the facts in the law are correct. But everything was generative AI in some way. Everyone was like latching on generative AI to their tech product.
I love the idea of, I'm not selling you anything, but please sell it to me. And also, I recently spoke to the two gentlemen who founded Maximum Lawyer. Mm-hmm. And they were already talking about how they're using it to do their legal research for them. So instead of like having to pore over all the documents, they just tell this. It's got to be separate from ChatGPT. It's another product that I think that they're working on that they can't really talk about. But he was saying, my legal research time has been cut from hours to minutes mm-hmm. already. And we're not even like that far into it yet. So obviously this is a huge topic. We have to talk about it. I'm sure a lot of attorneys that are running their own firms aren't sure yet how to, I don't know, take it on or even like feel about it. What's your take on it?
On generative AI specifically?
On any AI technology that can assist you in any part of running your law firm.
Yeah, I think you absolutely must be learning how to use AI right now. If you're a practicing attorney, if you don't want to use it on specific client matters, that's okay. It's okay to be cautious here, but you must be learning how to use it and how to incorporate it into your practice. Because if you don't, then you will not be a practicing attorney for very long. And why is that? That's because you can't, like we talked about earlier, you can't continue to build time and make money that way when other lawyers will be adapting generative AI, which makes them much more efficient and effective in how they're able to deliver legal services. They will stop billing by the hour. I think generative AI is the thing that I was waiting for to be like, see, I told you everyone, all the lawyers, I'm shouting out into the void, start using the subscription model. Well, this is the reason why you need to abandon the billable hour, is because generative AI will make it no longer the most profitable way that you can make money. And so you have, so the lawyers who adopt AI and start using alternative fee arrangements, they'll soon no longer be alternative fee arrangements. They will be the fee arrangement, and lawyers who are billing by the hour will no longer be hired. So you have to start playing around with it so that you're ready for when that happens, because it will happen. It will be gradually and then suddenly.
I do love the idea that like the legal profession as a whole would all be in agreement that like, no, we'll all use AI, to assist us with our caseloads. And we'll all still bill by the hour, but like 9 hours out of the day that I'm done asking AI to help me with my caseload, the 1 hour I spend in court, I'm just going to like sit around and play like ball in a cup in my office, you know? So there is something coming. You're definitely right. I don't know that it'll be all subscription-based, but I definitely see a lot. I mean, over the past 2 years, over the previous 10, I haven't talked about alternative billing. And over the past two, I've heard flat fee, value-based, and now you're the first person that I know who's really doing a subscription-based model for legal services. So something is changing.
Yeah, and I've got to plug my one of the episodes of my podcast, because we did a deep dive on AI, and I will have more guests coming on to talk about it. But it's lawsubscribe.com/#. The legal Singularity, which is a book that's coming out. I interviewed the co-authors, and this is what we talked about. Like, we did a deep dive on AI and the future of law. And so definitely go listen to that episode if this is a subject that interests you, to the listeners. Or you could, on a podcasting app, you could probably search Law Subscribed Legal Singularity, and I'm sure that episode will pop up. So it's definitely worth doing some research on. Their book is not out yet at the time of recording. I don't know when this episode will go live, but it'll be out in July of 2023. And I pre-ordered it. Like, I want to see what they have to say about it. Right. So, cause I interviewed them on my show, but like the things they talked about that's going to be in the book, like they wrote the book before generative AI was like on the scene. Right.
Wow.
So I feel like they're going to have like an addendum to the book very soon. But what they said is like so much of what they were talking about is already starting to show itself in light of the takeoff of generative AI and ChatGPT. And I have used case text co-counsel a little bit with like legal research stuff. It's very particular, like just like ChatGPT, the quality of the prompts, it affects the quality of the output, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you have a bad prompt, it's going to be a bad output. But unfortunately, unlike ChatGPT, like case text co-counsel, you can't do like sequential prompts. Like you can't be like prompt this for like a memo and it does the research and then like a follow-up. Like you have to like reprompt, you have to, the workaround is you reprompt it, but slightly differently to see if you get a different result. Which is why it kind of makes sense to do the subscription for it instead of pay per prompt because of like the way you need to do it. But what I love about ChatGPT, although it's also not perfect, is you could do a lot of sequential prompting. Same thing, but more sarcastic. You know, same thing, but in the style of Hemingway. You know, like you could do like different things. Same thing, but pithier. Or, you know, like, so you can't do that in like a case text co-counsel yet. You might be able to in like 6 months from now, because who knows, man, right? Like it's moving so fast. But I am like, I'm not using it to do like brand new cases. Like I'm comparing it against research that I've already done to make sure to see what prompting do I need to give it so that it gets the right answer that I believe is the right answer from research I've already done. And once it sort of gets a little bit closer to that, or as I get to be a better prompter, then I may start using it more for new cases, for new files. But I'm learning as much as I can about prompting, so much so that I even got the domain to legalpromptengineer.com. And so like I'm trying to establish myself as an expert in legal prompting, which might frankly be the future of being a lawyer, is being a legal prompt engineer. Which is crazy to think about.
Wild. In the same breath of checking out your podcast and that specific episode, which I will obviously include in the description of wherever you're watching or listening to this. So if you're looking for that, it's in a link to wherever you're listening to it, unless you don't have a screen, in which case I have no idea how you got this. If our listeners have enjoyed this conversation today and would like to hear more from you, where should they go?
So LinkedIn is the easiest way to like reach out to me and find me, Matthew Kerbis, or if you search The Subscription Attorney on LinkedIn, you can find me there. I mean, my DMs are open, and also click on the bell on LinkedIn so that like you actually get notified like when I'm going live, when I'm doing things like what I didn't learn in law school, or I'm having a LinkedIn live event like with Carolyn Elefant. That's how you'll know, is you got to click that bell on LinkedIn when you connect with me there. Otherwise, the law firm is subscriptionattorney.com. where even my engagement agreement and all my prices are transparent. Feel free to just learn from my website, other lawyers, to see how I'm doing it. It's all out there for clients. It's all out there for you too. And if you want to listen to the podcast, lawsubscribe.com is where you could go for that, but also search Law Subscribed in all the podcast apps and you'll find it.
Matthew, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Want to give a special thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this conversation, and we will be back with another episode of Everything Except the Law soon. Be sure to check out previous episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Answering Legal YouTube channel. As always, links to everything covered today in today's conversation can be found in the description of this episode. We hope to see you next time, everyone.